Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Android Central podcast. I have no idea what number this is. Andrew, help me out.
Should be 305.
Yes. Welcome to Android Central 305. As you can tell, I am not entirely here in my mind, but my name is Daniel Bader nonetheless. And this week, I am joined by two regulars on the show and one brand new, very special person who I will introduce in just a moment. But first, Andrew Martinick, how you doing?
I'm doing well, and I just confirmed that it is actually 305, so we're good.
Awesome. That's good to know. And Jerry Hildenbrand, how's it going there?
Pretty good. I used to have a sweet Malibu that had a 305 in it. So...
I'll get to what that means after this, but I'm so happy to introduce Florence Ion to the Android Central podcast community. It's awesome that you're here. How you doing?
Good. I'm so excited to be here as well, Daniel Bader. Thank you for having me on today.
Well, the first of many times. So Florence is new. Flo, as many of you know her, is new to the AC community, but she is a very well-known person in the Android community at large. Why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself before we get into the show?
Certainly. So I've been covering Android for the past 4 years. You may have read my stuff at Ars Technica and PC World and Greenbot over the last couple of years. Now I'm here with you guys, super excited. And I'm also every Tuesday at night, you can see me on All About Android on the twit.tv network.
And we are big fans of AAA here. I've been on the show. I think everybody on here has been on the show, right?
Yeah. You guys have.
That's really cool. Connecting with Jason last Tuesday because I was visiting my kids, which sucked. I would have liked it.
Were you in California? Were you here in the Bay Area?
No. I would have been remote, but I was in Tennessee.
Ooh, also extra beautiful remote. Mountains in Tennessee.
Yep.
Man, you just like beautiful places, don't you, Jerry?
Everything about me is beautiful, baby. I had a straight face for a few minutes, but
I have, I have to say that I'm glad we started this podcast on a really kind of positive, happy note, because there's a lot of unfortunate stuff to talk about, and I think we'll have to address the elephant in the room first, because
the burning notes.
Because Burning Man is happening right now. I wonder if how many Note 7s are fueling the fires there. We've been covering the Note 7 recall. But Andrew, I know that, you know, you've been doing a great job keeping everything in one place. So, I mean, this really, had this happened by the time you recorded the last podcast? I can't remember. It might have happened just after.
We hadn't. Yeah. So the big news when Samsung finally acknowledged things and it really started kicking off was the day after we did our podcast. It might have even been that night. Anyway, it was that night, actually. So we had already recorded our IFA podcast, and geez, that podcast was already plenty long without a discussion of this huge recall. We could have done another 2 hours. But so it all kind of started rounding up a week ago now, where Samsung came out after we had seen some trickling reports out on Wednesday and Thursday last week of Note 7s exploding or catching on fire or having issues with the batteries. And then Samsung finally acknowledged it and were like, hey, following all of these, they were kind of cagey about it at first, you know, following some reports about security of the batteries or something or another. They did not an official recall in terms of going through proper authorities in all the different countries, but they did a voluntary exchange program where you could turn in your Note 7 and get a new one. And then in the last, what would you say, 2 days this week, it's really come up to a boiling point where, okay, this isn't something to mess around with. Everybody just box up your Note 7, reset it, put it in, you know, and return it to whatever carrier or retailer you bought it from, or call Samsung and have them initiate that return for you.
Yeah. So I think the recall was officially announced on the 5th, and it then took a day or so for every region to get on board. I know here in Canada, we had a press release issued on the 6th. And since then, it's been a bit quiet, actually, until right now. We just got official word from Samsung US and Samsung Canada, Samsung Australia. They're all issuing official documents on their pages detailing how you can go about exchanging your Note 7. But, you know, Andrew, this is pretty much unprecedented, right? Like, nobody has ever done a recall in the smartphone business on this scale.
Yeah, I think that the closest thing, and I know Jerry will be able to talk to me about this or back me up on this, the closest thing we've had to this is when NVIDIA recalled, I think, every single Shield tablet it made for fire concerns. Now, of course, that was not on the scale of 2+ million phones. We're talking about probably 100,000 tablets or something like that. But NVIDIA had the same issue. And NVIDIA, whether for the fact that it was, you know, there were no carriers involved or it was in fewer markets or a smaller number, handled things a lot better in terms of they emailed every single person on day one. They had a page available where you plug in your serial number and they instantly sent you a box with a new tablet to put your old tablet in and send it back to them. They handled that very, very well. I think Samsung at first was maybe a little reluctant to unable to, because of the scale, handle something like that right away, especially when you have people just, you know, they want to just walk into an AT&T store and return their Note 7 that they bought and get a new one. But that's why we had this different situation in each country. I know you mentioned Canada. I think that they were they're just getting all the information out the right way in the U.S. now, where all the carriers have their systems in place. Samsung now has like an overarching U.S. recall website where you can go look at it and see an FAQ on the information and things like that. I think I give Samsung applause for the first, you know, the initial response where they said, hey, we're going to recall every single one of them. Like, we're not going to try to cherry pick units. Yep. We're going to recall every single phone. I can give them that. The downside was this gray area of probably 4 days, spanning over a weekend as well. And, you know, there are time differences with everything being headquartered in Korea. But there was that gray area where people did not know what to do. And I think that Samsung came up short in the one critical area of they did not just say, stop using your phone. They downplayed it, saying there were only 35 cases and you know, they didn't say either way. And what they needed to do was they needed to say, box up your phone, reset it, and do not use it.
Well, I'm going to disagree there, because they said you should return your Note 7. You can't keep using it if you return it.
Well,
I mean, they
yes.
could have worded that much better, but
I think they could have said, stop using it immediately until you return it.
Yeah, I agree. They didn't attach the urgency to it that it may have needed.
Well, I also think that it took them a few days to get on the same, get to the same place across the entire, all of their markets, because they have very, I mean, there's Korea, which is sort of HQ, and I have no doubt that the recall initialized there and the initial wording initialized there and then funneled out to local markets.
Yeah.
So we have to keep in mind that there are, you know, a few dozen Samsungs as we know them, and they all work with their carrier partners in various markets. And what I heard in Canada was a little bit different than what you heard in the US, which is different than what Alex heard in the UK. And it's actually quite lucky that the phone had only launched in a few markets before the second, because yep. what they did was they actually stopped selling it on the first, which is now 8 days ago, the day before it was supposed to launch in Europe and the UK.
that's kind of the bigger thing. If you think about it, we saw the reports that 1 million or so had been sold, but there were another 1.5 million in the sales channel ready to be sold. And those were all able to be scooped up. And if this had gone on a few more weeks, you very easily could have seen another 500,000 or so out in the wild. And that would have been extra detrimental to the situation.
Flo, have you been able to sort of get a handle on, you know, from the perspective of the media, do you think that Samsung has done a good enough job communicating with you so that you can communicate with your readership?
No. No, I don't know. It kind of felt like the news was really big all over the Android sphere, but, well, actually, I take that back. Because now that I think about it, I was seeing stories like this pop up all over like Reuters and all sort of the mainstream publications to let people know that their phones needed to be recalled. But I mean, this is just, it's kind of like a car manufacturer if they recall something, right? Like you have to really coddle everybody to ensure that everybody swaps their phone in for a new one. Like whenever I have a recall, you know, on my car, I get a piece of letter in the mail that I can physically open and have somebody say, hey, like this thing happened, you need to go get this exchanged. Because a lot of people who use smartphones don't necessarily read tech sites. So how are they going to know about that sort of recall? I did also notice, though, that I got an email from Samsung, the Samsung proper, because I had registered the Note 7 that I had with my last gig with my personal email. And so I had received an email from them that said, hey, you need to come and exchange your device.
And I got an email from T-Mobile as well.
Yeah.
Well, and that's an important thing.
And Verizon sent me one too, by the way. Yeah. Sorry.
See, Samsung isn't Google or Apple. If a Nexus phone or an iPhone needs recalled, only one person sold it. And it's up to Apple or Google to contact everybody. If you bought a Note 7 in the U.S., Samsung didn't sell it to you.
Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, right. And Sprint did. Or Best Buy.
Samsung builds the phones and sells them to those people. And then those people in turn sell them to you. And they are the ones that need to be contacting each and every user and be more than willing to facilitate the return process. And that's where the huge fail is, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The horror stories about people trying to return their Note 7 to AT&T just infuriate me, and I'm not even involved.
Yeah, because I think the one part is, I mean, you can be sympathetic to Samsung's situation knowing that they can't exactly, you know, they're getting flack for this, obviously, but the carriers are the ones that, you know, they have to distribute information on this to hundreds and hundreds of stores and make sure that, at least right now, they're taking care of customers in a way of full refunds or replacement phones that are just going to be turned back in again in a couple of weeks to get another new phone. And I don't know how the back end dealings are going to happen between Samsung and the carriers as far as, you know, reimbursing them for all that cost. I mean, that's a huge cost to the carriers to, you know, in terms of just this inventory management and all this other stuff from hundreds and hundreds of stores from each carrier. I don't know if Samsung's going to reimburse them for that or how that's going to happen, but you can be a little sympathetic to Samsung. And then at the same time, you can say, why did you not have a process for this ready to go? Because it really does feel like they're scrambling and had no process for this.
I completely agree with you, Andrew. And I think that brings up a larger point of just how much the American market in particular relies on carriers to sort of like be the middleman for all of our, you know, device purchases. And I have had so many problems with Verizon, as I've talked about before, and I can imagine that they had a lot of angry customers from this particular recall.
For something that wasn't their fault, obviously. Yeah. I mean, it's from the manufacturer.
Andrew, you said that it seems like they're scrambling. They are.
Yeah, they are.
We compared it to NVIDIA, NVIDIA identified a thing that could happen sometime in the future and took their time, verified it, and did a recall in an easy way. Samsung has phones out there that could blow up in a user's hands right now, and they are just scrambling to save face. I mean, they're doing the right thing, but they're doing it for their own good. But I'm glad I don't work for Samsung right now, because I'll bet it's hectic as everything.
It is, but you have to have an emergency plan in place if this happens. I mean, NVIDIA makes components. It doesn't just make devices. It understands that if something explodes inside of a PC, for instance, with, you know, one of their GPUs, that they're going to be the ones liable for it. Samsung also makes components. It makes a crap ton of tech. But I feel like there's this sort of, I don't want to say haughtiness, but it does feel like there's a sort of haughtiness because they're the biggest smartphone manufacturer in the U.S., right next to Apple, that there was no sort of like disaster preparation plan for this. There should have been. There should be a protocol for this. And if you're relying on carriers to sell your devices, then you need to have that plan in place so that you can immediately go to the carriers and say, this is how you're going to handle everything. And don't worry, we will reimburse you, but we need you to just listen to us for right now.
So, I mean,
I think there will be next time.
I understand what you guys are saying, and I agree, but I think more of this criticism should be levied on the carriers, if only because the carriers agree to sell these phones so
also
that they
true.
Can sell you to, you know, you, they can sell you 2 years of cellular service.
Also true.
And many carriers in the UK, in Europe, they do not go to the lengths that U.S. and Canadian carriers do to sell you handsets, especially those that are tied to service. If they didn't want to be in this business, if they just wanted to sell you service directly, sell you a SIM card and that's it, they could do that. They could get out of the phone selling business, but they are entwined with the OEMs because they make a crap load of money. And as a result, the onus should be on them to have protocols in place. That's why there are so many carrier stores. That's why the distribution model is what it is. Because Samsung has tried in many countries, including the US, to sell directly to consumers. And the carriers often are more of a problem. They get in their way rather than work cooperatively with them. So,
yeah, I agree with you, Daniel. I completely agree. I think it just brings a bigger point to the fact that, like, our countries are just really tied to carriers telling us what to buy and selling us things. And it's really maddening, especially when something dangerous like this happens.
So I agree, Dan. They get the bulk of the profit. If you include the service contract for 2 years, in my opinion, they get to carry the liability. This is Verizon and AT&T and T-Mobile and Sprint and everybody else's issue more than it is Samsung's.
Yep.
And Andrew, I mean, what's so interesting is that the Galaxy S7 and S7 Edge are now sold unlocked directly from Samsung in the US. And it took a few months to happen. It took about 5 months after it went on sale at the carrier channels. But what it says to me is that Samsung does have a distribution model in place to sell directly to consumers in the US. But they, for some reason, decided to forego that for the Note 7 launch. I wonder, is this something that they may emphasize more in the future now that they know that, you know, if the carriers are more an encumbrance to this process than they are a solution, then, you know, maybe they'll focus on, you know, trying to do their own financing plans the way that Apple's doing them with the iPhone 7.
And
Motorola's been doing Google. It successfully for a couple of years now.
I hate to look at it this way, but if this makes that happen, thank you, because I've been wondering the same thing for 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you would always prefer to control your own sales channels and your own retail. And of course, there is that added cost of, you know, all that costs money, versus the guaranteed sales of, like Jerry said, they sell the phones to Verizon. And then Verizon sells the phone to you. Samsung gets paid when Verizon buys the phone from them. You know, of course, it's all a bunch of contracts and their minimum sale requirements and all that kind of stuff. I don't know exactly how those deals are done. Of course, that's a protected trade secret. But I wonder, I mean, obviously Samsung has more information about how many phones they sell through carriers versus, you know, direct to consumer in all their different markets. They know exactly how that breaks down and they know what the cost model is there. I still don't, I mean, even with something huge like this, I still don't see that triggering them to say, okay, no, we're not going to go through the carriers anymore. I think it's, if anything, it's going to be more of a, you know, 2 to 3 year transition where they say, okay, now we're going to do what Apple does, where you can buy from Apple on day one online and get the iPhone, or you can go to a carrier store on day one and get the iPhone, you know, because Samsung, like you said, Daniel, is still a, you know, what, 2 to 3 month lead time before you can get it unlocked, which is a pretty large lead time before you can buy it unlocked. And they still don't do things like Motorola and Apple do as far as financing or an upgrade program or something like that. So I could see Samsung saying, you know, really spinning this in another direction where they say, hey, you don't have to deal with, I mean, they can never say, hey, remember when our Note 7 caught on fire? We don't want to do that again. But they can say, you know, they could spin it as, hey, you get the direct Samsung experience. You don't have to deal with your carrier. All the support's through us. You don't have to do any of that. I mean, they already do a, they do their own insurance replacement program as far as, you know, buy their insurance, pay them $80 whenever you break your phone and you get it back and all that stuff. But they haven't gone all in, especially from day one, selling direct to consumers. And I have to believe that's not just from incompetence. That has to be, you know, from historical sales data.
Yeah. And also the relationships, the ongoing relationships they have with carriers are immeasurably more important than the revenue they'd get selling directly to consumers, at least at this point. It's just common. It's the way that North Americans buy their phones, and until something drastic changes, it will continue to be the way customers buy smartphones in North America. So
that's the way we've been trained, though. I mean, we've been trained to buy phones that way ever since phones became a accessory in life.
I agree with you to some extent, but I look back at something like the Nexus One and Google's ambitions for that phone as disrupting the traditional sales channel, going directly to consumers, and how hard that failed, how few phones they sold overall, and how difficult it was to penetrate the mainstream smartphone market for a phone that at the time was probably one of the best on the market. I mean, it was hardware-wise, software-wise, it was certainly one of the more compelling phones on the market, but so few people knew about it because it wasn't sold at the carrier channels. And then Google corrected that with the Nexus S, and it did so much better because I know in Canada, they sold a ton of them through the carrier channels, and the same with the Galaxy Nexus. So I just wonder, it took until the Nexus 4 when they lowered the price to $299 for the Nexus program to really pick up as an alternative to buying a phone through the carriers. I mean, am I wrong there? Did it look a little bit different in the US?
No, it was the same.
That was the same as far as the Nexus S and Galaxy Nexus went. I think that in terms of Samsung's position, they're in a weird, it's kind of a double-edged sword because Samsung is one of the companies that's big enough to be able to say, screw you. We have our own retail footprint and we can sell them online and we can do a bunch of stores and we can sell them on our own. But at the same time, because they're so huge and they've worked out these long-term deals with carriers and they have such a long legacy of working with carriers, they get great deals working with the carriers too. And on the other side, somebody, you know, like if there's a company like Honor, they're not going to be able to make inroads with the carriers to sell through the carriers anyway, even though they're a big, you know, backed by Huawei, of course, it's a separate brand. But even with that size, they're not going to be able to get inroads with the carriers anyway. So they just sell directly, even though, sure, they would love to be in every carrier store when they're coming from nothing. So Samsung, even though they're big enough to do it on their own, that doesn't mean they want to give up the guaranteed income of the carriers providing.
Yeah. Plus, also, I just am sort of thinking, you know, about my parents here. If my mother were in this situation with her, so she has a Galaxy S6 Edge, per my recommendation. And if this were to happen to her, she would not go to Samsung to get a new phone. She would go to the carrier. She would go to the Verizon kiosk near her work after work. And she would walk in there and say, Samsung issued a recall on this. Can you please provide me with a new phone? And she would expect that Verizon would give her A, B, and C what to do. And she also pays device insurance through Verizon. She doesn't even know that Samsung has its own device insurance or anything like that. That's why I'm just sort of thinking, like, there's a lot of people we have to train. It's not just us. It's like, you know, all the people who are just so used to going to their carrier for everything. And we have to train them to not think of the carrier as the one-stop shop for all of that.
And we have analytics to prove that people are searching for Galaxy Note 7 recall, and it's only increased in volume since the weekend. I mean, since Wednesday. So it's Friday today, and our traffic on that post is much higher than it was when we put it out earlier in the week. And this is because the mainstream media is picking up the story and people are searching on Google on how to recall their phone. And it's an important thing. I'm not tooting our own horn, but I'm just saying that we're doing something that not a lot of websites are doing.
We're allowed to toot our own horn.
You know, we're providing a service because the carriers and Samsung, until a few minutes ago, didn't have a form that, you know, didn't have the same resource that we've been offering for 4 days. Like, that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
What we're doing should have been, if you go to Verizon.com, that's what you should have seen.
Yeah.
If you go to Samsung.com, that's what you should have seen.
Right. I was just starting to look at the carrier websites here to see if there's some kind of like a banner or, you know, something. It's like, no. I mean,
you have to click on the actual like Note 7 link and it'll say out of stock. And then above it, because I was looking at the Note 7 pages this week, and it'll say like, note, read about the recall information. But that literally was updated from what I can recall on Wednesday. That's when it was updated of this week. So if you were looking at the Note 7 on Monday or Tuesday, you were SOL.
And even then, it's like, okay, so they're putting the onus on me to go to T-Mobile.com, go to the Galaxy Note 7 page and look for a recall. I mean, I get like they send emails or they put it out on Twitter or something. It's just feels like you could have something a little more comprehensive, you know, possibly from Samsung, but like T-Mobile should be cold calling people. They need to be sending them letters. They need to be doing like sending them multiple emails. Like the phone is not safe to use.
Yeah,
every September bill from the carrier should have an insert in it. I don't care if you have a Note 7 on your account or not.
I agree. Yeah. That's it. That's the same thing that would happen if you have a Honda. Honda knows you bought a Honda from them. They're going to tell you about the recall, whether or not it affects your car. Like, you have to know. Yep. And a smartphone is just as important as the car that you're driving because it's in your hand every day. And for God's sakes, if it is blowing up a car, like that guy with his Jeep in Florida, that's really bad.
We have to say the disclaimer that we don't know.
Blowing up
right.
a Jeep.
We don't know Jeep whether owner, the phone there are blew a the lot car of up. Things that can cause a Jeep to blow up in your driveway. I'm not going to blame it on a phone yet.
I was just going to say that, Jerry, but again. But hey,
us Jeep owners Jeep. Know exactly what I mean. We're okay with it.
I also, there are a couple other things that we should bring up.
Yes.
There are some people on the internet who think that this recall is overblown and that it may be safe to hold on to your device, to which we say, Jerry.
I say DarwinAwards.com.
Are these the same people that don't believe North Korea is a possibility for nuclear weapons? Because they were testing them yesterday.
If you're on the internet and you're in a place where you like to argue about smartphones with everybody else and your Note 7 is the best, damn it, you know what's going on. If you want to refuse the advice of the people who made your phone and it blows up in your hand, it's your fault. Enjoy it.
Plus, who doesn't want a new phone? I mean, let's say you scratch the Note 7. All right, dudes, I get to trade it in and get a brand new one. I think that's great.
What gets me the most are people. I have an electrical engineering background. A lot of people have one. These guys who love their Note 7 and want to deny the issue and spout out all this technical stuff that, while it's true, they don't know what Samsung knows. Listen to the people who made the damn thing and send it back.
All right, so Precisely. Let's actually do a very brief overview, Jerry, of what we think, based on what we know from various sources, is wrong with the Note 7, because Samsung's being very coy about what it believes the problem is.
Well, I mean, what we know from Samsung, and this is what we know, is that there is an issue with the battery. Well, a lithium-based battery, there are a lot of things that can make them expand until they blow up. They're just really volatile, scary things that if you've seen them blow up, you instantly be afraid of all the things that have them inside it. What's causing these batteries to blow up is a mystery. I've seen theories from there's small chunks of aluminum inside the battery paste left over from the manufacturing process. Yep, that would make it blow up. Or now a recent one I'm seeing, several people are telling me that during the quick charge cycle, it's sending too much voltage, which will excite the lithium and eventually cause it to burst and blow up. We don't know what's causing. Even a bad battery isn't just going to blow up without some kind of outside factor. It's doing nothing. It's just a battery.
And to be clear, as far as we know, the batteries that have blown up have only done so while it's being charged, right?
There's a case that we don't know how much is true and how much isn't, of a gentleman in Central Florida where the phone blew up while he was playing a game in his hands at the kitchen table, not charged in, or not plugged in.
Right.
How much any of that's true, I don't know, man. I do know, even if there is a manufacturing defect, and if it is particles inside the battery or something, even with your phone turned off in the box, on the shelf, in your closet, it can blow up.
So that's led to, Andrew, the FAA coming out with a statement saying, we don't recommend you charging this phone while you're on a flight, and for all intents and purposes, keep your Note 7 turned off for the duration of your flight. Do you think that's the right move?
I think that's just, it just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. I feel like the FAA needs to either put its foot down and legitimately tell everyone that you're not allowed to bring them, or they need to say that it's, you know, not a problem, or not, I mean, just not say anything, because this just scares people. Now, people should be worried, but they don't need to be scared. They need to just turn off their phone, put it in the box, and drive it to whatever store they bought it from, or, you know, initiate the return with Samsung. They don't need to be scared, excuse me, that the person sitting next to them on the plane, oh my God, he's got a Note 7, we're all going to die. Like, that's what's going to happen. Because people are already, they are already worried about flying. They're worried about security at airports. And the FAA saying that Note 7 should be turned off and put in your bag, but still bring them on the plane, it seems really weird. I understand that the FAA wants to say, you know, do this for high, you know, for improved, I guess, safety on planes. And we've seen individual airlines, I think in Taiwan and Australia, you know, quote unquote, ban them. Although it wasn't really a ban so much as, you know, just please don't charge or, you know, use them on the plane and don't put them in checked luggage and in stowage. You know, those are good recommendations, but we're not, and we won't be, I don't think, at the point where you're going to be stopped by a flight attendant on a flight or a gate agent or a TSA agent telling you, you know, to put your Note 7, you know, throw your Note 7 in the trash can where they throw all the water bottles in the TSA line.
And until that happens, what they're doing is just lip service.
And, And it's just, it's extra, yeah, and it's extra confusing as well, because now you put out this information, and, you know, when the FAA says something, people, and they strongly advise against something, people notice, because then it's going to be on CNN that night saying that the FAA advises that you don't fly with a Note 7. And we've had, I mean, we travel a lot for this job, and a lot of people in our comments have expressed that they travel a lot, and they only have one phone. They have the Note 7, and, you know, I'm going to be on a flight next week, and I'm going to be on a flight the next week and the next week, and I don't have time to return my Note 7 and or be away from my Note 7 for a week because it's my only phone. And the FAA coming out and saying this weird stuff that's just going to scare people is not useful in any way to me.
I want to see Andrew in a Zorro outfit with a Note 7 right on the airport.
That'll get JFK evacuated for the second time in a month.
Right. I think that if you stand on a, you know, you walk onto the plane and you look at the, you know, look the captain in the eye and say, hey, look at this Note 7. Did you see the news? That's probably not a good idea. Then again, I would say that you shouldn't be walking around with a Note 7 anyway, because you should have returned it already.
Bingo.
So, I mean, for as inconvenient as it is and as stupid as it is, you should just return the phone. And the FAA should have either A, not said anything, or said, we understand that, you know, for the safety of passengers on flights in and out of the U.S., that you should return your phone, and here is a link to the Samsung page where you return your phone. I mean, I think that that would have been what the FAA should have said.
So before we move on, it may be a good idea just to go over exactly what that U.S. product exchange program looks like. Right now, I believe it's similar in other countries, but for those listening in the U.S., you can go to your carrier or directly to Samsung and trade your Note 7 for a new one that's going to be available as early as, I believe, Monday. So this coming up Monday, the 12th, you should be able to, in some cities in the U.S., go in and get a brand new Note 7. Or today, if you want to go and exchange your phone, you can get a brand new S7 or S7 Edge and any equivalent accessories for free. So you won't have to shell out anything. If you bought a S-View case for your Note 7, you'll be able to get a refund and get the same case for the S7 Edge or S7. So plus there's also a $25 gift card, in-store credit or bill credit, depending on your carrier or outlet.
Yeah, that's really in flux depending on the carrier as well. Some are offering it, some aren't. I know T-Mobile goes above and beyond and says they will just straight up refund you completely, and then you decide what you want to do with that money. If you want to, for example, get a Galaxy S7, you know, you just have all your money, and then you can make a new purchase and you can walk away with the difference, or you can go buy an iPhone 7 or, you know, whatever you want. They're not doing just the straight swap, which is nice. And I think beyond the carrier stuff, the nice thing is you can also call 1-800-SAMSUNG. And they will initiate a refund an exchange as well. But that's going to take a little longer because that is only for a straight swap for a Note 7, I believe.
We're going to be on the lookout for when they do update. But personal communication with some people from Best Buy, they are going to allow you to also bring back things like fast chargers or anything else that you've bought, even if you didn't buy the phone from them, for a full refund.
Even if it's past the normal time. I think Samsung's goal should just be to make everybody feel at ease about this as much as possible. And as long as it can achieve that, then it's doing the right thing. At this point, it hasn't achieved that, and people are still very nervous. And it'll take a couple of weeks, I think, before this all plays out the way it should. But Samsung Australia put up a page earlier today going over what your new good battery, quote unquote, Samsung Note 7 will look like. And Andrew, it's a pretty obvious kind of exterior change, right?
Yeah, it's going to be on the box where they're going to put a big S logo and a sticker. You know, when you look at the end of a box and it has a bunch of barcodes and your IMEI and stuff, you'll see a big S logo, and the IMEI sticker will also have a black box in the corner. So you'll be able to know straight ahead of time, you know, when you, you know, when the person at the store takes out the box, you're going to be able to tell if it's a new batch, for lack of a better term, of phones, or if it's, you know, an old one that was sitting on a shelf getting dusty the past 3 weeks. Now, this doesn't help you if you're trying to buy a phone secondhand. You know, this is going to be going on for weeks and weeks and weeks. Do not buy a Note 7 secondhand, I would say. And if you're going to, you're going to wait until Samsung has said that they're going to have a form online where you can enter the IMEI number of the phone. And of course, that's hard coded to the device, and you'll be able to enter it in and see if it was, you know, pre-explosion or post-explosion.
Let's put hard coded in quotes. Well, I can change that. Don't buy a used Note 7 on eBay. Just don't.
It depends if somebody, I mean, yes, don't buy one on eBay, because somebody can tell you that the IMEI is whatever they can tell you. Now, if it's a phone that you're buying, you know, in person, you can be a little more secure in the fact that the IMEI that you're looking at in the software or on the box is the IMEI of the phone. But the best way to go about it is to buy new and buy it with the new label on it. I mean, that's Samsung's indication to you that it's safe.
So I'm going to go one step further, and I'm going to say that Samsung should work with the GSMA to ban the IMEIs after a certain period of Note 7s that were affected by this battery. They do the same thing for stolen phones today. They work with the carriers in North America.
The carriers should definitely do that.
All over the world to disrupt the service of a stolen phone. So they can and should do that for the Note 7. So if you do happen to buy a Note 7 used, keep in mind that this could happen down the road. If the GSMA works with Verizon, T-Mobile, Rogers, and Samsung, or whoever, they can retroactively stop your phone from working if it deems it necessary. And that's a price that you'll pay for wanting to buy a cheap Note 7 today. So keep that in mind.
It's reassuring to know that one of my ideas, at least, is an extreme. Because I agree. I think it should be done Monday. That will encourage everybody to take their damn Note 7 back.
That's a pretty good idea, actually. I don't think it'll happen, but you know, it may set a precedent. All right, are we all Note 7'd out? Should we move on to the other big phone elephant in the room?
Yes.
Let's do it.
LG V20.
Nice.
So glad you didn't say iPhone.
Good one.
I want to talk about this phone. It is in my hand right now, and three of the four of us on this podcast have used it. I'm going to start with you, Flo, because you were with me at the launch in San Francisco, and Andrew, I'll get to you because you had a really nice pre-brief on it, and your articles, mm-hmm. your hands-on's up on the site. But I want to get your initial impression, Flo, of what you think of the successor to the V10.
What do I think of the successor to the V10? Well, I will say that the V20 is a total upgrade from last year's V10. I wasn't really into like the rugged silicone backing that was happening with the V10 last year, although I kind of understood like what the point of the aesthetic was. You know, this is a phone you're supposed to take out with you every day and like create with it. But the V20 is more sleek. It's lighter. I remember we were doing Note 7 comparisons. It's just a tiny bit bigger, but not significantly so that it'd be, you know, a pain in your pocket, so to speak. I think what's going to be the most interesting and compelling part of the V20, though, is whether the software is really a sell for users. Like, if it's really something that people are interested in.
And Andrew, you got a sense of the phone in your hands-on time with it. It's obviously mm-hmm. the first non-Nexus or first commercially sold phone that runs Android 7 Nougat out of the box. What was your impression of the software experience?
It's like a G5 on Marshmallow. I mean, it's about 90% of what you get from, you know, a modern LG phone. And that's not to say that it's bad. It's just if you got super excited about Nougat from, you know, admittedly things that we talked about as being, you know, awesome, and the new interface changes, you know, we've been talking about it on the Nexuses. That's not what you're getting here. Of course, you get the good stuff of Nougat, like the, you know, new security underpinnings and multi-window and better battery life from DOS improvements and direct reply and notifications and, you know, things like that. Those are all there. And of course, if your phone ships with, you know, is the first phone shipping with a new version of Android, that also means that you're a step ahead of all the other phones that, you know, maybe shipped a month ago with Marshmallow on board. But I think that the software is fine. It works like any other LG software. They've cleaned up the notification shade and the settings a little bit, you know, visually, but it all works the same as it did before. And LG still includes a lot of its own customizations and its own apps and things like that. LG is putting understandably, they're putting a lot behind saying that, hey, this is the first Nougat phone, and that's an accomplishment for us. Of course, I think they talked at the event about, you know, we've partnered about with Google for Nexuses, and so that partnership is something that led to this. That's awesome. But do people really care that much? Yeah, I think the people that care a lot about that are people that would probably appreciate Nougat on a Google phone instead.
Andrew, you were like a ninja the way you lightly stepped through all that. Very well done.
I also want to get your sense of the hardware, because
sure,
that's even a bigger story here. LG's done an about-face in many ways when it comes to the design of the V20. A lot of people thought that they would iterate on the more bulky, I would say, I don't think it would be incorrect to say masculine design of the V10. Yeah. And yeah, I think they've done a really nice job here, but I want to get your sense of it.
Dude.
Dude what?
I might as well buy a D-Tech 50. It looks the same. It's just, it's not a successor to the V10 at all. And I know a bunch of V10 owners that are going to feel the same way, and that is disappointing.
Yeah.
In person,
it doesn't look anything.
How many V10 owners are there actually?
I think the sales estimates were 1.2 million total.
Okay.
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know about that. That seems really high.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I just, you know, I was just thinking about this because remember LG was talking about, oh, well, this is what the V10 users like really were looking for. And I'm like, what V10 users? And I mean, I live in a pretty populated area, and I feel like I see a lot of smartphones around here, and I have not seen a V10 out in the wild since its launch.
I mean, here's the thing. Even if they did, for, you know, sell to consumers 1.2 million phones.
Yeah.
That is not, for a company the size of LG, that is not a win.
Yeah.
And that is not something worthy of keeping a product line alive for. If you're selling 1.2 million phones over the course of a year, that's nothing. I think that the V10 hardware-wise has a wider appeal than the V20 has a wider appeal than the V10.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
That's a very important. It's basically a bigger, better executed G5 design.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, right? Should have been the G5.
Right. It very much feels like a G series device from that perspective. But of course, they took the extra size to throw in some extra stuff, like keeping the removable battery, having the dual cameras on the back still, the second screen, a bigger screen, of course. And whether it's because of the design changes or just the size that they got to work with, it feels so much more solid than the G5. The G5 feels kind of flimsy and cheap, and it's just that coating that they did on the metal just was not right. And the way that they've done it on the V20 is so much better. And
it's a stunner. The V20 is a stunner, although I'm kind of bummed it only comes in two different colors.
Yeah, they're... I think that they made a lot of good design choices. They make good material choices. They have all the hardware on the inside that's good. I mean, they did the 64 gigs of storage with an SD card. They did Snapdragon 820, 4 gigs of RAM, quad HD display, all the camera stuff, USB-C, the removable back and battery that's executed perfectly, even though, you know, we don't really see that many phones with removable backs. I mean, of course, other than the V10. So they've done all that stuff and they pulled it together into a phone that, yes, it may not appeal to the V10 crowd, but that wasn't really a crowd. You know, it was a group, like a group, not a crowd. And
if you make a product that appeals to a certain type of user, when you decide not to continue it, you deserve the backlash you'll get, even if it's just from a few users.
I think that they very easily could have called this a G series something. They could have called it a G20 for, you know, whatever. I think that the V series didn't carry much weight either way. So it's very weird. And they borrowed so much from the G5 design, and it's using the G5's cameras, for God's sake. And it's got this basically the same software, styling and features. It at least made sense before that the G and the V, at the time the G4 and the V10 were different phones, different lines. Like, yeah, that made sense at the time. And now it doesn't really make sense. And it's annoying because that's kind of clouding up the fact that this looks like it's going to be a really good big phone. And that's why it's a little funky. Like, are we going to see a V30? And then that'll maybe make more sense at that time. I don't know, because right now the V20 doesn't mean anything to anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the LG mobile unit is in flux in many ways. It's coming off I think everybody would admit a pretty big failure with the G5 in mm-hmm. terms of overall sales and just the execution of its so-called friends accessories. It was the first.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that too.
It was the first big name modular phone to some extent. They made a lot of noise about its ability to augment it with a camera and with an external DAC or an alternative DAC that never actually shipped. A lot of the core competencies that you didn't get in the G5, or you could have augmented it with through those friends, are built into the V20. And to some extent, that's just an acknowledgement that the friends strategy was an utter failure. But there is a friends manager app built into the V20. I noticed it the first second I turned it on. And I find that
still
really
got
interesting.
The 360 cam.
Yeah, the camera is a friend. The
exactly, but
camera.
They're not abandoning the branding altogether.
Yeah, that whole branding story and the whole, play more, with your friends or whatever thing just never really, I don't know if it just didn't translate well to the Western market, but it just didn't translate just to people that, paid attention. It just didn't make a whole lot of sense. And so it is kind of weird to keep that going. I mean, I understand that there are people that are going to have a 360 camera from LG that will need that app, but It is kind of a, I don't even know.
It doesn't resonate.
It doesn't resonate at all. It doesn't make any sense. So I understand that the V20 does not include this modularity. I know we thought at first when we saw renders of the phone, it looked like the bottom might be able to come off. But the fact that they didn't try, I mean, obviously it wasn't going to work with the G5's modules. But the fact that they just didn't even try again with the V20, which is the bigger packed full of all kinds of things. Like, you would think that the higher end big phone would be the one to do crazy modular stuff with, not this small sleek G5. And so that's why it didn't really make doesn't make a whole lot of sense strategy wise. And I wouldn't be surprised if we never saw another modular phone from LG.
What's interesting, I just read a tweet about how LG is not releasing the V20 in the UK.
Or Europe in general.
And it is coming to Canada, but I found that it's actually coming on a very limited scale. Only a couple of carriers are going to are going to hold it. So the distribution of the V20 is clearly more limited intentionally than the G5. So,
and interestingly, on the other side of that, though, in the US, they went all in. They got top five carriers on board for it. Whereas with the V10 launch, it was kind of like, oh, T-Mobile's on board, and then AT&T, and then Verizon, and then they're just not going to pay attention to it at all. But now they're going right out from the start. They've got all five plus B&H and Best Buy to carry it, which is, you know, that's big for something that they couldn't point to the V10 and say, hey, you got to get on this next great thing. They really had to, or they couldn't have pointed at the G5 and got them on with that. So I think that's a little win in the US, even though, you know, that's just on a personal note, being in the US, not for somebody that's in Europe and is like, oh yeah, that's kind of a cool phone, but nah, you can't have one.
I mean, if LG really wanted to capitalize on the Note 7 recall, it would launch this phone tomorrow. It would do everything it could to fill those carrier channels as soon as possible and get this into people's hands, because it is, unlike the V10 compared to the Note 5, this is a very competitive device with any big phone on the market today. And I could see a lot of people turning their heads towards the V20 if it was next to a Note 7 on the carrier shelves going, well, you know, I don't trust Samsung anymore. I'm going to buy an LG. And that's just not happening, because this is only coming out in Q3, which, I mean, it could be next week, but it's more likely to be, you know, end of September, early October.
Yeah, and that is the weird regionalization is still something that's kind of funky with LG, and that's something that Samsung in general has kicked, at least on its Galaxy S7 and S7 Edge. It was like, yep, it's going to be available everywhere. If you live on planet Earth and you want to buy a Samsung Galaxy S7, we'll be able to sell one to you. And LG still kind of does this weird thing where things are different in different regions or not available. Like, we have the Bang & Olufsen branding only in Asia, but not in the US, but it still has the high-end DAC inside no matter where you buy it. And you get headphones in Asia, and you might be able to get headphones in a limited run in the US. And it's like, no, this is such an old school way to do it. Just release the phone everywhere that people want to buy it. And that's something that it's like LG is not doing itself any favors when it already, you know, it's not exactly at the top of everybody's mind to pick an LG phone.
That could also say just something be, real. Oh,
yeah,
I'm
go
sorry,
for it, Jerry.
Skype lag about the B&O stuff to the people who are concerned. If you're concerned about audio quality, you're fine without the B&O stuff. What B&O did was just a little bit of tuning to change the sound profile. You can get apps from Google Play that do that, or use the equalizer in whatever app you use to play music. And as far as headphones go, you probably already have a whole lot better set of headphones or earbuds than what would have been in the box.
Oh, of course.
So don't worry about it.
And the funny thing is that LG agrees with you, because they're not putting it everywhere. Yeah. They're only selling it in places where you get a little bit of that extra bump from the brand cachet of having B&O, because that's a well-known brand. But LG is already telling you up front that it's not that important, because they didn't put it in every phone.
Right.
And they didn't want to, you know, obviously there's a business deal behind the scenes there. I'm not sure who eats what cost, but the important thing is that you get the LG default tuning, which is good, and the quad DAC, which is apparently very good. So you get those things either way, but it's just a weird perception thing. It's like, if you either go all in and you give it, you know, you make B&O this big headline partner that's in every single phone and in every single box, or you just don't do it, because it's the perception that you're missing out on something by not getting that version. Even if, I mean, the perception is the reality, because you don't have the choice sitting on the shelf where you choose the B&O one or the not B&O one.
Yeah, I don't know. I still think LG doesn't understand the US market as well as Samsung has. And I also just think that they don't have the cachet with carriers that Samsung's achieved. So they can't make the demands. They're still asked by carriers to make custom models. They still have slight variances in the SKUs that Samsung has somehow overcome. And that just comes from having the success, year after year of the Galaxy line that LG just hasn't been able to replicate. So it's still a big deal. It's still a big company, but it isn't. I don't believe it's number three in the world anymore in terms of phone sales. Anyway, it's been overshadowed by Huawei and Alcatel and ZTE.
I think the difference for LG there is that their mid to low range market is not as big as all of the other big players.
Yeah, that's true. I do want to, talk a little bit about, what happened on stage was very interesting at this LG V20 event. They brought on, which is not uncommon, a Qualcomm executive to talk about the partnership between LG and Qualcomm in terms of the Snapdragon 820. But they also brought the CEO of ESS, the company that actually makes the quad DAC inside the V20. And it was a very technical conversation. It wasn't as accessible as it could have been, but it was also a very interesting conversation because LG believes that audio is one of those last bastions of smartphones that can actually be heavily improved upon. And, as we'll talk about with the other big phone announcement this week, audio inside smartphones is pretty controversial. A lot of people use them for various reasons. They stream to Bluetooth, they use headphones, they listen using the speakers. But Jerry, I mean, you are an audiophile. You have $1,000 headphones. If you're going to be seeking out a phone today, is the V20 the one to go for, or do you still suggest the HTC 10?
I haven't checked out the V20 yet, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's probably as good or better than what was in the V10, just because it's ESS, and other products with an ESS quad DAC sound exceptionally good, for a small device. I want to try it, but it's definitely a slim choice. The HTC 10, they do some sort of magic, and the V10 were both excellent choices, and I'm going to assume that this is going to go right in there alongside them, and then you have the rest, which is disappointing, and I agree with LG that that's the last thing. That's the last thing to fix.
Well, I also want to ask maybe a stupid question, but one that I know some other people have asked in our comments. Is quad DAC, is that literally four separate digital to analog converters, or is quad just a branding name?
It's kind of in the middle. There are actually four gates. It can produce more fidelity. If Dan, help me explain what fidelity is.
Higher when you're quality listening sound.
When you're listening to a high quality file on a set of good headphones, it will sound a little better. And we can talk about the specifics and the electronics in the forums. If anybody is wants to get into that, I love that kind of stuff, and we can talk for hours. But for everybody, the people that just want it to sound good, it's going to sound a little bit better, potentially.
All right.
Can I make an observation very quickly?
Please.
So first of all, I have to say I Snapchatted or whatever, socialed the V20 event with the Moto Z Force. The microphone on that thing is terrible.
Real while recording video.
Yeah. So like I played back the videos that I had done on Instagram and Snapchat, and they all sounded really muffled. And I was really surprised about that. And just to add to Jerry's point, I think one of the reasons that LG is sort of talking about audio and how important it is, it is important for like the common person, because I was just thinking about that situation where I was just socially posting and the audio sounded weird. Well, for those of us who like to go to concerts or maybe go to the opera and, maybe Maybe you shouldn't be reporting at the opera. No, you should not be Snapchatting at
the
opera.
It's a new age, man.
I mean, it is a new age. And I probably will Snapchat the opera someday. But, you know, when you play it back, even if you're just recording it with a camera app, you want it to sound good. You don't want it to sound all muffled and weird. You want to be able to hear all those different, you know, vibrations and melodies or whatever buzzword goes with sounds. But anyway, hopefully LG will sort of teach people that that's what's important, you know, in addition to battery life, which is apparently...
Speaking as somebody who has about 6 hours of his own Grateful Dead bootlegs,
of course
I sure wish we had better microphones back then.
Oh, yeah. I would love to hear those one day, Jerry.
Oh, they're still wonderful just because of what they are, but they'd be so much better if they sounded better.
It's true.
I'm going to listen to How the West Was Won, the amazing DVD that compiles a lot of Led Zeppelin bootlegs from the late early 70s, late 60s, early 70s. Sorry, Flo. I had this memory of like myself as a 16-year-old sitting down in front of the TV and watching How the West Was Won. And it was just, it's so, such good memories.
Yeah, for sure.
So I just, you know, before we go, I want to talk about the only other big news this week from the smartphone world. And that was obviously the announcement of 4x4 MIMO coming to the T-Mobile network. You know, it was, and if anybody doesn't...
Nerd.
If anybody doesn't know what that is, what this allows, if you have a new phone like the GS7 or Note 7 or the upcoming V20, it allows you to hit peak speeds of 400 megabits per second in some parts of the US. And what they're doing is they're combining 3x carrier aggregation, which is my, like, that's just geek speak for 3 separate downlink feeds from your carrier, combining it with a really wide band. So they're calling it 256 QAM, which is the modulation type. And then they also combine it with 4 separate antennas. So there are it's 4x4, which means that you have 4 separate feeds within each carrier. All this is to say it's the fastest speeds currently available in North America. And I am super jealous of anybody who can take advantage of it, because here in Canada, we just hit 3x carrier aggregation on Bell in Toronto. And I can sometimes hit like 200 megabits if there's nobody on the cell. But yeah, 400 megabits is like as good as it gets right now in most of the world, unless you're in like South Korea, in which case it's like completely normal. It's like a Tuesday.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's just my burst of carrier nerddom.
Benefits other phones, correct? Because I actually live very close to a test bed for that. And it's been kind of live while they're fiddling with it for about a month. And with just my regular, you know, a Samsung Galaxy S7 Edge, I can get 140, 170 megabits down when I'm there.
Yeah, because even though you're still getting 3x carrier aggregation.
Okay.
It's just that they've just turned on 4x4 MIMO, and your phone will need a software update to initialize it. But even now, they've basically been using 3XCA for any phone that supports it in those areas. So you're benefiting from it right now without the additional upgrade.
Cool.
Let's take a moment to thank our sponsor. Our sponsor this week is Harry's. We are so happy that Harry's comes back week after week because they offer a better shaving experience for less. Harry's, we've spoken about many weeks now. It is a razor company that offers blades for half the price of the drugstore brands. Their 5-blade razors include a softer flex hinge for a more comfortable glide, and trimmer blades for those harder to reach places, a lubricating strip, and a textured handle for more control when it's wet. I've said this again and again, but I love using Harry's blades. They are significantly better for the price than what you'll buy from the drugstore. Not to mention the fact that if you don't like the experience, Harry's will give you a full refund. But why would you? Harry's really focuses on quality. The company was founded by two friends in order to offer guys a great shave for less. They even own their own factory in Germany, where they make the blades and produce them at the highest possible standards. If you want to try Harry's, AC Podcast listeners have a special deal where you can get a starter set, which includes a weighted razor handle of your choice, moisturizing shave cream, 3 precision-engineered 5-blade cartridges, and a travel cover, all for just $15. And for a limited time, there is a special offer for fans of the show where you can get it for even less. All you have to do is go to harrys.com and use the promo code AC at checkout. That is harrys.com and use the promo code AC when you check out for your first purchase. Thanks for listening, and we're back to the show. Obviously, we do have to talk about the announcement from San Francisco yesterday or on Wednesday. I know, Flo. So
we transitioned from a phone for audio files to a phone for people who don't listen to music at all.
We're talking about, of course, the iPhone 7 and iPhone 7 Plus. Who wants to go first? Because I was there. I was on the iMore show. You can, if you care, you can hear me on that. But I know there's some trepidation about the announcements in the Android community. So why don't we start with you, Andrew, and we'll go around the table.
I'm trying to pick out the big things. Obviously, the cameras. I'm super excited in the cameras and the 7 Plus, but more importantly, the fact that they put a good sensor with a faster lens and OIS in the smaller iPhone as well is important to me, because if I'm going to buy one, it's going to probably be the smaller one. And it was kind of crazy that there wasn't OIS in the smaller one. So camera-wise, I think that they're both going to be very good. Anybody who's used an iPhone 6 or 6S knows that the camera is good there. The interesting part about that is that are they better than what the Galaxy S7, S7 Edge, Note 7 photos, or cameras can do? I'm not exactly, I want to see that. And I know that our own Derek Kessler is going to put them all head to head and do it, one of his great camera comparisons. But that's one thing that's interesting, is I know that the cameras are going to be good if they're, even if they were just the same as the iPhone 6S, they're good, but they're doing all kinds of new stuff. That doesn't mean that they're going to be the best in the industry, just by default. That's one thing that's changed over the last couple of years. In terms of the hardware, it's like, yeah, they're kind of just, they're big metal slabs. I like that jet black one. I think it's really nice looking in photos. I don't think I would ever use one for fear that it won't look that nice in a couple days. I have a space gray iPhone 6S right now, and I would probably go with that color again. But that's the big thing, is the hardware kind of just is not inspiring to me. I mean, it's very clearly well made, and the iPhone 6S is very well made as well, but it's kind of just boring to me. And it's just a slab of metal that has a big camera hump in the corner that rocks on a table, and the front is very bezel-y. Of course, the home button doesn't physically move anymore, but still takes up a lot of room on the front. And it's just kind of like this rounded rectangle that just, honestly, the external hardware is not that interesting to me anymore. And I know that they're kind of probably storing up for next year to be like a crazy off the walls new design. But for now, I wouldn't, I'm not, I've lusted after many Apple products because of how they look. This one is just kind of like, yeah, it looks like an iPhone. That's cool. That's basically my roundup there. I have no interest in trying to live with iOS 10 or iOS 9 either way. So you would really have to have some lustworthy hardware for me to put up with iOS at this point.
Interesting. What about you, Flo? Is there anything about the iPhones 7 that piques your interest?
Oh, God.
Yeah, sorry.
I have to say I'm happy to see that Apple finally added optical image stabilization to both camera or both phone models. I think it was absolutely ridiculous to overlook just to leave that out of the iPhone 6, or excuse me, the 6S, the regular 6S. So I am looking forward to seeing, you know, how it compares to Samsung's phones. I'm curious to see if they've done anything to, like, their post-processing engine, because I know that, you know, Samsung tends to be more saturated, more contrasted. So I'm curious. I'm curious to see what the photo samples will look like. But, of course, the thing that just really gets me is Apple saying that they have courage for removing the headphone jack. That is just absolutely rude. I think, you know, Anne Frank had courage. I don't think Apple has courage because it removed the headphone jack. I think that showed a gross amount of privilege on Cupertino's part to even use that terminology. And the reason I bring this up is because what companies do at their keynotes and at their events when they're sort of delivering this marketing story to journalists and its partners, they're trying to convince us of this, like, the sort of marketing story that they want to put forward. And I just think it's absolutely disgusting that they would have used such terminology. And it's part of the reason why, you know, and I don't mean to sound juvenile because of this, but it's part of the reason why I really appreciate being an Android user, because we just sort of don't have this kind of terminology that we're using. And I think, I don't know, I just think it's, I think it's important, the kind of rhetoric that we use when we're talking about devices.
Yeah, I mean,
my only thing is, I just hope that that was an ad lib line. That's the best case scenario.
It wasn't.
It is that nobody approved that ahead of time, because that is bull crap. I can't believe that they, it's just so dumb. They could have, Apple is usually so good about properly, you know, taking the route of spinning things positively. And this was like, no, we cannot spin this positively, talk about audio quality, talk about how many phones get yanked to the ground because your headphones get tangled. They didn't talk about any of that. It was just like, this is a thing we're going to do. Okay, so that was courageous. All right.
My fiance had asked me the other day, he said, so what are Apple, like, fans saying about this fact that there's no headphone jack? And I'm like, well, they think it's very sweet of Apple to include the dongle in the box. Like, people are like, oh, well, at least they're including the dongle in the box. It's so nice of them. Usually, you know, they charge you an extra $30 for that. Yeah, because that's how Apple has trained its user base. And, you know, I'm not trying to turn this into an Android versus iOS thing, but I do think it's an important thing to keep note, because a lot of the Android OEMs and manufacturers will take after what Apple's doing in a sort of a marketing sense. And I just want to, I don't know, I'm really curious to see if OEMs are going to follow through, because I know Motorola is already doing this with the Z, but Motorola, I don't see, and I apologize to Motorola and Nova for this, but I don't really see them as a major player the way that I do Samsung and LG, as far as Android things go. So I'm curious to see how this is going to trickle down to the rest of the industry. And I just hope that, I just wish that Apple would stop showing its privilege, because I just think it's rude.
It was just a dumb move.
It was.
And
it was
think
a bad
that,
PR
I think
fail.
That Samsung PR fail. And Samsung and Huawei and Sony and LG, I don't think that they're dumb enough to remove their headphone jack like that. And I still don't get it on the Moto Z. Daniel, how have you managed? I mean, I know you've used the Moto Z more than any of us probably. How have you managed not having the headphone jack there?
Well, I try to keep the dongle attached to my main earbuds, but there have been a couple of times where I've kept the attachment in my bag and left the house with my earbuds in my other pocket, and then cursed as I get to the subway and realize I can't listen to music. That's happened more than a couple times. It's frustrating. I'll say one thing about the courage line. Nobody I talked to thought it was a good idea off the record. It was, you know, I talked to some Apple people at the event afterwards, and they knew, they acknowledged that it was probably going to cause more damage, especially in the short term. But I think that the end result here is that they're trying to get all of the bad press out of the way in a year that they really didn't overhaul all that much in the phone externally, so that once they launch this rumored, you know, 10th anniversary iPhone next year that is purportedly going to have no bezels and blah, blah. I mean, it's going to be a very different looking phone from what I understand. It's going to have much less of a controversy around the lack of a headphone jack. By then, it'll just be par for the course. What will be interesting is how they manage it in the short term. Yeah, they're including an adapter in the box, but they're really, really, really pushing those wireless AirPods. And that's what they want you to use. They don't want you to use
$160. Of course they are.
Yeah, and wireless headphones are not cheap. We know that a lot of people on the iMore team use the Bose QC35. Some people use Samsung or Sony wireless, Sennheiser wireless. I really enjoy my pair of noise canceling Fiaton Bluetooth headphones. But I don't know if a lot of people are going to go out and buy a really good pair of Bluetooth headphones because they just don't want to deal with an adapter in the box. So there's going to be a lot of short-term pain for what Apple believes to be a significant long-term gain, especially when it comes to what's inside the phone, because they said that removing the headphone jack not only makes it easier to protect it against water ingress, and now the phone has an IP67 rating, but it also allows them to add this taptic engine for the home button that they couldn't have done, or at least it would have been considerably more difficult to do if they'd kept that headphone jack in. So, Jerry, I don't know. Are you have opinions about things? What do you think?
I'm going to go probably a step too far with this conspiracy theory.
Go on.
I was just in the middle of writing something in our Slack channel about how to frame a post, how Apple left every single person who bought an original iWatch in the dirt, and it's either going to hold the platform back as far as applications, or it's going to fragment the store because newer applications that require the better graphics on the new chip won't work on the old, and they turned around and put the new chip in the old version to sell it cheap. So they just completely screwed everybody.
I mean, that's their MO, though.
Well, it's not. While I was in the middle of doing that, I hear courage, and I completely forgot about how they absolutely don't care if you bought an original Apple Watch.
So you are jumping to conclusions a bit, because there's no evidence that apps will not work on the first generation Apple Watch.
But I am and I'm not if they tout how great the graphics processing power is on the new chip, and you buy a Apple Gen 1 watch in a month that has the new chip in it, if developers write applications that can use any of that, it won't work on the old watch.
I mean, this is just how are you surprised? This is exactly what they do. They do this for operating systems on their computers.
They've never said, okay, we're going to keep selling the iPhone 4 and knock $100 off, but we're changing the internals on it. It was
they made the iPhone SE, but
it was just
they also continue to sell the old version of phones, even though they will get completely neutered new versions of iOS.
But they don't.
I mean, this is near the same, and they always have minimum requirements
for apps, and apps
won't run.
They are taking the most important part outside of the look of the new watch, and they're putting it into the old one and selling it cheaper, which is wonderful, but it leaves everybody who bought the first one, and by their count, it's, what, 1.5 million? They were proud of how many they've sold. All those people either are potentially out in the cold, or everybody who bought a new one. The alternative is Apple says, no, you can't put this app in the store because it doesn't work with every Apple Watch. And Apple's not going to do that.
No.
So
I just don't see why this is in any way surprising.
Well, it's also not uncommon. I mean, this is a 2-year-old product. So if you look at the life cycle of an iPhone or an Android phone. You know, the Nexus 5, for example, is not getting Nougat. Most developers are not targeting apps at just Nougat users because that would severely limit its potential user base, but it could. And if every Android phone got updated to Nougat on the same day, then they could potentially do that. But Apple's MO has always been get every single phone or tablet updated to the newest version and then set an endpoint for support. And I think they've done a pretty good job. If you look at the past, you know, the iPhone 5, which was sold in 2012, is getting updated to iOS 10 and will support any app that supports iOS 10 within reason.
You don't see a huge amount of backlash if Google gets on stage in a month and says, hey, we're going to revamp the Nexus 6 and put a Snapdragon 820 in it. Sorry if you bought it originally, tough shit. The amount of backlash would be huge, and we all know it. And that's what Apple did with the watch.
I think that would just be a dumb move.
No, but they're not selling the Nexus 6 anymore. They're selling the Apple Watch. Like they're not selling that original Apple Watch anymore. They're selling they're selling that chassis as the Series 1, which is a brand new product. Essentially, they released two Apple Watches yesterday. So all they're doing is they're fragmenting the existing market. But and I agree with you. I don't think it was as smart a move as if they just supported the first one.
Right. And that's my issue, is not that they did it, and I understand why. It's probably more expensive to buy the stuff to keep making the old model. That's just how this business works. But they stood on stage and tried to convince me that they were great because they did it. You know, the only thing to
Welcome
me...
Welcome to an was, Apple keynote.
The only thing to me that was any more consumer unfriendly was the Courage line.
I don't know. I mean, I may come off as the Apple apologist in the room, but I don't think that decision was as consumer unfriendly as you're making it out to be. I think that they're offering support for the original one and will continue to do so. They're updating it to watchOS 3. And then at some point, they're going to stop supporting it, just like they stop supporting all their devices. But they're positioning the new first-generation Apple Watch as a different product. So that's just, it's fragmentation, but it's not, I don't think it's deceptive in any way.
And that's
yes,
exactly
you are the
what,
Apple apologist.
Well, that's that's exactly what, I mean, Android Wear did that with the first batch of Android Wear devices. And so all these developers that had bought these kits to make Android Wear watches, they were like, well, great, I can't even like use the LG watch. Granted, I did not find it to be particularly attractive, but some people love that thing and they couldn't use it.
But my issue is that Google didn't try to tell you that was a good thing, and we love it so much, we're going to remake it with new internals and let you keep buying it.
To be
fair,
I have seen more Apple Watches, vastly more Apple Watches, which is apparently a tongue twister, in the wild than I have any variety of Android Wear watches.
Well, I mean, the Moto 360 is...
I sort of feel like why fix it if it ain't broke?
But and then we come to the headphone jack. That was that. I can't even begin. It's the Apple iPhones. And don't get me wrong, I really love the iPhone. You can hate me on that because I'm supposed to be Mr. Android.
Wait,
and
really?
All this.
You're an iPhone
yes,
lover?
I do not care for some of the things that Apple does with the software, and not the fact that they have a walled garden and lock you in. For the consumer, that's excellent. I think that's a wise decision and that they do the right thing.
I agree with you on that.
Outside of the software, I mean, man, I still have an iPhone 5S that I use because I just really like the phone. I like the phone, the way I can use it, the features that the hardware give me, the silent ringer switch, you know, that's just, it fits right. I like it. I don't hate the iPhone at all. Mm-hmm. I just, the headphone that turns me off. I do not want the iPhone 7 or 7S. Don't lie to me and tell me that your new Bluetooth headphones will sound better. Don't lie to me and say that you had to do this so I can use a Lightning set of headphones, because I've used Lightning headphones on an iPhone 6. It works just fine. Don't lie to me and tell me you did this so people can use wireless headphones and they don't knock their phone off the table, because you can use wireless headphones on your iPhone 6. Don't lie to me. And you know, I don't think they had the intention of lying. They were just trying to justify what they did. That just really rubs me wrong. I don't like that it's not there. And even more so, I don't like the way I was told that we did it because it's good for you. It's good for Apple, and it's not good for anybody else.
I would just like all smartphone manufacturers to stop trying to just make smartphones like thinner and sleeker and whatever, yeah, and just focus on making really quality hardware. I want a battery that actually lasts an entire day out. Like,
so
that is,
hang on a second. So the iPhone 7 lasts 2 hours longer than the 6S. And the part of the reason...
Allegedly.
Nobody's
tested it yet.
Well, allegedly that it lasts longer. But if it does, part of the reason is because they have extra room in the chassis because they removed the headphone jack. A lot of people are saying that's bull, and you know, if you look at iFixit, it's not just the space, you know, the hole for the headphone jack is not the entirety of the module, right? Every phone that has a headphone jack has some circuitry around it. It's not big, but it's something.
What removing that does is allow you to stack another part on top of the main board in that spot. So it potentially can create a good bit of room. I see that.
Where they're getting their battery savings is a re-architected processor,
sure,
and maybe a hair bigger battery. They've improved battery every single year without removing the headphone jack.
And you can't tell me that you remove the headphone jack and it gave you space to put the internals needed for a Taptic engine, and you also use that space for a battery, because you can't do both. That's, you know, physics doesn't allow two solid things to occupy the same space. So I don't know what they did, but either thing could be true.
I mean, it's one or the other or neither.
Right.
I don't know. At the end of the day, nobody's tried this thing yet. There are a lot of very disappointed people out there. I'm disappointed they removed the headphone jack. I don't think it was the right move. I think it's that part to me is the consumer unfriendly thing that they did.
Yeah.
I don't care for wireless headphones. I like good quality wired headphones, and I will continue to do that. And I don't think the Lightning port it's another proprietary port, and Motorola's, they're dealing with the same thing on the Moto Z with USB-C based headphones.
They were brave to do that, by the way. They were very brave.
They were courageous.
That was actually courage, because after that whole Lenovo rebranding thing, woo-hoo.
I mean, but we hold Apple to a different standard then, because
if Motorola is
legitimately brave because they are actually taking a stand, and Apple is...
Oh, I don't think they're taking a stand. I think they're brave to assume that they have enough pull in the industry to be able to innovate in that manner.
Oh, they won't get nearly as much support from accessory manufacturers, but at least they did get some, you know, to launch some USB-C type USB-C headphones at the same time as the phone was released. So at least there was something out there.
You know, if Apple wanted to show courage, they would have removed the Lightning jack and put a USB-C port in there.
Oh, amen.
Everything else in the world either runs on USB-C now or will in 5 years. Everything but your iPhone.
Its own freaking computers have USB-C power. So that part to me just makes no sense.
Yeah, that doesn't allow them to charge manufacturers $50,000 a year for a license to make stuff.
Well, when I have to buy the Belkin splitter that allows me to plug in my headphones and charge the iPhone 7 at the same time, I'll just scream Jerry at the top of my lungs.
I think I'm disappointed in the headphone jack mostly because it's Apple. We've been around smartphones long enough that, I mean, an iPhone and an iPod, that was for music, man. That's what you moved. Part of the reason why I moved to a smartphone was so I didn't have to carry a Walkman with me anymore.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I remember how cool it was.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
The software was so poor and it was so crappy, but I put up with
it. It's still poor and crappy.
Do you guys see the... Oh, Andrew, did you check out the gold-plated Sony Walkman that was announced at IFA?
Buy me one, Dan.
Who is buying these things, by the way? Because they keep releasing them.
I did see it, and I think it's the most Sony thing ever.
Of course it is. Amazing.
How much was it? Like $1,100?
Who's gonna buy this?
No, it's like three or four thousand. I think.
Who's gonna buy this?
The one from, was it CES this year or I think it was last year? Sony had a crazy new Walkman, and I think it was close to $2,000 or something.
$1,799 because Phil wouldn't buy me one. Damn Phil!
Right, and this one is like three times.
Well,
that
Jerry,
price.
as your new leader, I will buy you one out of my own pocket. To make you feel good.
Oh my God, I'll kiss you, man.
Oh, I'm coming down to West Virginia.
I've wanted a new Sony Walkman for ages, but I can't convince my wife to let me buy one. And she's smarter than me, and yes, she tells me things and I listen to them.
Good.
I'm at
better.
Least that smart. I'm just smart enough to listen to my wife.
So you know what I got at the front door?
What?
My ZTE Axon 7 that I've been waiting for.
Oh, you know what I got today?
What?
Actually, I don't know if I can mention it. Never mind.
Hey, you have to check if it's under embargo.
I didn't get anything,
so mean. Very mean.
Sorry.
I have to, not only do I not get anything, I have to give back my Note 7. So it's like, come on.
I remember what that felt like. I had to give back my Note 7 to my last gig, and I really had a hard time parting with that thing because I was so in love with
Jokes on them.
And now I'm like, should I let them know they have to send it back to Samsung to get a new one? And then I was going to ask you guys, are you guys going to turn in? So you're turning your Note 7 to go get one that won't explode. Okay,
yeah.
Good. Because I don't want you exploding. Although...
It's currently off right now. It's just sitting here.
Although it would make for good journalism.
It would, but I was going to say, although you're in Seattle where it's very wet, so maybe you'll be okay.
Well, if
I'll just
Andrew,
throw it outside.
If you wanted to, go to Lowe's and buy drywall that's made for bathrooms and see if they have a broken piece and set it out on your porch or on your deck or your patio, whatever you've got, and plug the damn thing in and just let it stay plugged in until it catches fire. That drywall won't burn.
And then put the HTC Re on it to take like a time lapse.
Yes.
Finally, a use for that thing.
Hey, I still use my Re. I still use my Re, y'all. Okay.
Yes, I love that thing.
I'm hiding it inside the bouquets of one of my bridesmaids, and we are going to film
there
the walk down the aisle.
That's awesome. Okay. That's a great use for it.
I've got a GoPro, and I bought one of them Xiaomi action cams that are 4K, and they just sit here on the desk, and I still use the Re.
Oh, yeah. So you just still use the Re.
This podcast went off on a tangent and a half.
Yes.
But that's why it's the best damn Android podcast on the internet.
Correct.
Except for yours, other one. This is also, you have to claim ownership over this podcast now. You
That's
have to
true.
Share custody with AAA.
That's true. I don't have to share custody of all that Android, though.
We should totally get Jason and Ron on this podcast.
Oh, that would
we
be
should.
Awesome.
You can't destroy the internet.
Oh, my God. We would totally destroy it. It would implode. The Android internet would literally implode. We should do that for the next Apple event.
Just have a
powerhouse. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you should do that. Should live podcast it.
And just be like, you know.
You don't want me on any type of live event during the Apple keynote because I say words that just you can't publish.
I'm the worst, too.
We could just put it as a Hangout or a YouTube Live or something and tell people that there's going to be swearing galore.
You already saw how my thought process works with my conspiracy theory that I still believe, and you'll never convince me otherwise.
That's fine.
So,
you know, you're entitled to be wrong, but you know, that's just No, I mean,
it's all right. If you're going to get me a Walkman, you can.
I believe Apple's part of the Illuminati too. I saw the tattoo. I saw the tattoo Tim Cook has on his index finger.
Who else is part of the Illuminati? Is Zuckerberg in there?
Lady Gaga, Zuckerberg, my hairstylist. She actually has an Illuminati tattoo on her finger.
What?
YouTube told me Will Smith was.
Will Smith the actor?
The Fresh Prince.
No, he's a Scientologist.
But Cat Williams says he's part of the Illuminati on YouTube, and he would never lie to me.
I think he's a Scientologist.
He's not like an official Scientologist. He just is friends with a lot of them and supports them publicly. All right, I think we're going to end it there, folks. If you stuck around for this half-hour tangent, thank you so much. My name is Daniel Bader. I am Journey Dan on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, anywhere else. And you can find me on Android Central and iMore and all the other places Mobile Nations has a presence on the interwebs. Andrew, where can people find you?
You could also find me on Twitter, Andrew Martinik, Andrew, Martonik. I don't really use Google Plus anymore, so that's not a good place to find me. But Twitter's good, and AndroidCentral.com, you can find me all the time on there, but you get the fun stuff on Twitter.
And Jerry, what about you?
I am at Xenu, the Scientologist Overlord on Twitter. At GB Hill on Twitter. I'm on Google Plus, but PM me with all the... right wing versus left wing versus Jerry doesn't give a damn stuff that goes on Google Plus. I stay away. Maybe I'll be back after the election and President Hillary is there to laugh at you all. But I don't have patience for that. I'm too old for that. So if you want to hit me on Google Plus, it's plus Jerry Hildenbrand. And for real, DM me and I'll get back to you. Or best way to get a hold of me really is email, because I'm old, and that's jerry@androidcentral.com.
All right, and Flo, last but not least.
That's me. Well, I've got a parking ticket from the SFMTA over here that I could certainly use help with. And if you want to help me with that, you can tweet at me at othatflo, F-L-O, or follow me on Snapchat where I... will show off my parking ticket for apparently not having updated license plates. I really have to get that taken care of. Also, I will be managing the Android Central, the official Android Central Snapchat. So I know it's another thing for you guys to follow, but I promise we'll make it fun. We'll be using the Snapchat to cover events, just kind of show you what I'm working on and what everybody, what's sort of going on in the world of Android Central. If you want to follow that, it's Android_Central.
And if you're listening, Android Central, the person who took our Snapchat,
yes,
please give it back.
Give it back.
Email me at the Scientologist Overlord at AndroidCentral.com.
This is an issue. Do we need someone on the internet taken care of?
I think so. Because, I think we need to call Will Smith.
I know some Romanians.
Say no more, fam.
I know some Romanians. If we ever need backup.
I think we're good. I think Jerry sounds like he's going to take care of it. All right, everybody, thank you again. This has been one hell of a podcast. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week with even more great stuff. And please, please return your Galaxy Note 7. That's it. Have a great week.